Before I start, I was charged by members of my congregation to remind you that I am the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Rock Valley in Rockton. They want to make sure you know that. So let me tell you a story. It's one you've heard before, and it begins, as so many stories do, with, "Once upon a time, there was a little boy who loved chaos. He thought it was great to see his parents and neighbors get riled up for no reason, so he found a way to make a ruckus wherever he could. He sometimes would hide the important things his parents needed for their day just to see them run around and try to find them. Or he'd chase the dogs around the yard until they howled. Sometimes he would walk through the town, knocking on doors and running away, laughing at the annoyed expressions on the faces of his neighbors as they realized that no one was there. One day, the boy heard some adults talking about a wolf that a hunter had seen in the woods nearby, and he knew that all the adults were worried that the wolf would come into town and hurt someone. So what do you think the little boy did? Any ideas? He cried wolf, that's right. I don't even need to tell you the rest of the story, right? Because our Western culture has integrated it so thoroughly into our language that I can say, cried wolf, and you know the entire story. There are hundreds and thousands of stories that make up our culture. We as humans have become so good at story that we can distill them down to two words just to quickly get our message across. In fact, every single word is a story. It can tell us a story. Now, do we choose a word with a negative or a positive connotation? Do we use a simple word or a complex one? What kind of inflection do we use when we choose that word, when we say the word? Many playwrights and movie makers have helped play with this inflection, writing whole sections of dialogue where both characters say only one word, back and forth. Now, an extreme example of this comes from a truly horrible movie, please don't try and watch it, called Basketball. The two lead characters have a whole conversation using just the word dude. It's pretty crazy. Sometimes these compact stories can shape us, though, in ways we don't even understand. The idea that we are wired for story is more than a catchy phrase. Neuroeconomist Paul Zak found that hearing a story, a narrative with a beginning, a middle, and an end, causes our brains to release cortisol and oxytocin. These chemicals trigger uniquely human abilities to connect, to empathize, to make meaning. Story is literally in our DNA. We have at our fingertips an unimaginable library of knowledge in the internet and on our cell phones and just available to us at all times, and still stories in the form of newscasts or sitcoms or dramas dominate the way that our culture shares information. Another major influence in our Western culture has been fairy tales and nursery rhymes. These stories that we tell over and over to our children stick with us into adulthood. They're little morality tales meant to teach us right from wrong, how to navigate in an uncertain and dangerous waters of life. Take our boy who cried wolf, one of Aesop's fables. Okay, so let's pick up where we left off. Crying wolf. The boy, he was running down the main street of his town shouting, wolf, wolf. And all his neighbors got scared and ran around grabbing weapons and tools to fend off the wolf, but a wolf never came. The boy went home laughing, and his parents weren't very happy with him. And the townsfolk weren't very happy with him either, and some of them even yelled at him. But he got lots of attention, which he liked. So he did it again. This time the townspeople were angrier than they were the first time, and many of them shouted at him, and some had a talk with his parents. And he got even more attention, so he did it again. After the third time, most people ignored him, but some people didn't want to take the chance that a wolf was really coming, so they stood watch all day and all night. These people were particularly angry with the boy when no one showed up. They shouted, they threw things, they told his parents they better lock him up. And at this point, the boy started to get a little scared. He decided he wasn't gonna play wolf again. But the next morning, he was out walking in the woods, and suddenly, behind him, he spotted a wolf stalking him. He took off running as fast as he could into the heart of town, shouting, "Wolf, wolf!" But, of course, no one came. After the last time, they all agreed to ignore his antics and withdraw their attention so the boy would learn not to trick people. He ran as fast as he could, but as you know, little boy legs are short and wolves run fast. It looked like his time had come. So let's reflect a little on this story and some elements that I added. First, obviously, my more modern version has more embellishment than the original fable, which is one line long. But the moral is still the same. If you habitually lie and people know that, they won't trust you, even when you're telling the truth. But did you notice something in my telling of the story? I gave a little reasoning behind his behavior, gave him some character besides liking to do bad things, because our stories are huge and multifaceted, but can only be told from one perspective at a time. From the outsider point of view, this boy is a menace and gets what's coming to him. But he's still a whole person, a whole character. In her TED Talk, The Danger of a Single Story, author Chimamanda Adichie reminds us the story is intensely powerful at creating culture, but it's dangerous to only tell one story because it can shape the perception of a culture, of a people, to a point of distorting the truth. She says it's impossible to talk about the single story without talking about power, how stories are told, who tells them, when they're told, and how many stories are told are really dependent on power. And power is the ability not just to tell the story of another person, but to make it the definitive story of that person. So our boy, defined by a single story, is a troublemaker. But from his point of view, he's getting his needs met, maybe in the only way he knows how. Now, the single story of our boy is a common one. Ignoring the motivation of someone while telling their story easily turns them into a one-dimensional, easily written off, non-character. I see this so much in the way that some racist figures in power in America have manipulated the story of what it means to be a black person here. The stories that black folks are criminals have filled our prisons with young black men and women incarcerated for only minor drug charges, or worse, murdered in the streets for no crime at all. It's a story that has permeated the hearts and minds of even black folks themselves, of police, and of the general public. This single story is so powerful that people believing a hate monger when he says that all Muslims are terrorists and all Mexicans are job stealers, this single story is so powerful that nearly half of voters in America voted for a liar and a crook. I'm sorry, I have to say it. Because he feeds into fears, and he says that he alone can keep us safe. How, I wonder, how can so many people ignore the moral of our tale to believe this man's lies? Perhaps it's as Samuel Croxall suggests in A Critique of the Fable, when we're alarmed with imaginary dangers, it's hard to differentiate between crying wolf and the real thing. So how do we decide when to protect ourselves for real? There are always people who are motivated by fear to believe in the unreliable, because it's better than being unprepared for calamity. Like the folks who still prepare for a wolf, even when the boy had lied so many times before. The world is a scary and dangerous place, and we all have our own ways to deal with it. The best we can do is try to change the story, or at least tell more than a single side of it. Brené Brown has a book called Rising Strong, and it's one of my favorites. In it, she talks about the importance of claiming our own stories, not letting them take control of our lives. We tell ourselves stories about how our world works, about how we need to function in it, but sometimes these stories hold us back. Perhaps the boy who cried wolf believes that the only way to get attention is by acting out, by causing havoc. But Brown might tell him that it's important to be in touch with his feelings and to express them safely to his family so that he can get the attention he needs without disrupting other people's lives. Brown says, when we deny our stories and disengage from tough emotions, they don't go away. Instead, they own us. They define us. Our job is not to deny the story, but to defy the ending, to rise strong, to recognize our story and rumble with the truth until we get to a place where we think, yes, this is what happened. This is my truth. And I will choose how my story ends. So we have choices to make. We can retell the same story with the same ending and be eaten by the wolf. Or we can look at the story from a different perspective. We can take control of the narrative of our lives and our future and choose a different path. The story I choose to tell goes back a little in the wolf story. It goes back to the place where the townsfolk had a talk with the boy's parents. Now they suddenly realize that their son needs to spend more time with his peers in a nurturing environment. And they realize they could use some family therapy where they can safely talk about their feelings. And the boy gets a chance to say how hard it's been for him to change from elementary to middle school and finds finally productive uses for his excess energy. And the story, the broader story that I want to tell, has us showing up on the side of love. My story has the whole country showing up on the side of love, denying hate, and a single story. The story I want to tell has us shaking off the dust and getting up and moving forward. My story has us embracing Brené Brown's Manifesto of the Brave and Brokenhearted. And here it is. There's no greater threat to the critics and cynics and fearmongers than those of us who are willing to fall because we have learned how to rise with skinned knees and bruised hearts. We choose owning our stories of struggle over hiding, over hustling, over pretending. When we deny our own stories, they define us. When we run from struggle, we are never free. So we turn toward truth and look it in the eye. We will not be characters in our stories, not villains, not victims, not heroes. We are the authors of our lives. We write our own daring endings. We craft love from heartbreak, compassion from shame, grace from disappointment, courage from failure, and showing up is our power. Story is our way home. Truth is our song. We are the brave and brokenhearted, and we are rising strong. Please rise now.